trying to think of good birthday presents that I can get for Ada. Just noisemakers galore. Maybe a tiny set of steak knives.
She does have a keyboard that she really likes because she doesn't so much play the keyboard, but when you press the on-off button, it plays a tune when you turn it on, and it plays a tune when you turn it off. And she'll press the button, and it plays the tune, and she'll look at you like,
look what I did.
She's so excited that she can press a button.
Look, I have made music from nothing. I love that.
Being a musician is easy. Well, I'm on coffee number 4, I think, but there was some decaf in there. But also, we had a kid in the house next door, which y'all heard yesterday, reference to this kid crying a lot, but also had been the whole previous day playing either a recorder that sounded a lot like a kazoo or a kazoo with an unusually like melodic range that this kid just didn't know how to use. So either way, I was like loaded with dread yesterday that we were going to have kazoo interference.
Kazoo interference. I love that. That's going to...
The entire time.
The things we have to worry about.
I'm working on a book right now that has a lot of fake band t-shirts, and I think kazoo interference is going to make it into the list. For those who don't know, if you're listening to this right after it gets released, the thing we are referring to recording yesterday was the season finale for Starship Mudskipper.
That's right.
Which will almost certainly not be released before this episode of Basic Pitches.
Oh, hell no.
So if you're listening to this in real time, you can expect that soon. Or if this is an old recording, hopefully it's released by now.
It was recorded on Easter, so you can think of any kazoo noises or crying child noises as Easter eggs.
Ah! Well, making lemonade.
Out of eggs.
Ew.
it's like Greek egg lemon soup. That's
a lemono soup, which Helen calls elemento soup.
Elemento soup. Ah, oh, love it. You could do it with alphabet noodles, and it would totally be elemento soup. I don't know where to find like dry alphabet noodles though. Like, you go to the Italian grocery or something like that, and even then they have like all the accent marks.
I'm just picturing someone like making their own alphabet soup out of just regular noodles and stuff. And, like, the L's and the I's are super easy.
Yeah, you could do the homemade noodles.
Yeah, well, you do it like the way people pour pancakes in the shape of letters. They'd just be really big noodles.
Hey, speaking of taking normal things and making them more suited for children... Ah, is that a good segue?
Effortless, just totally seamless.
So,
yeah. So last week we did a basic pitch, and near the tail end of the basic pitch, we ended up discussing like family-friendly versions of things that very definitely didn't start out family-friendly.
With the example of Beetlejuice
Godzilla. Yeah,
like an interesting opposite of like the typical stakes creep that we see in a lot of like TV shows and movie series where things get like bigger and crazier as you go forward. This is like the stakes go down and things turn cute or just like cool. And you were very into that idea and like why that might sometimes happen. I'm so curious to hear what you've come up with.
And I'm curious, it's just... I don't know, anthropologically, it's very interesting to think about, like, why do some things, like Godzilla, for instance, which is just, first, like, the original Godzilla movie is just this horrifying, you know, monster who is just this massive force of nature and metaphor for the trauma of, you know, atomic bombs and just wreaking havoc. And it's very sad and people die. And then, like, three movies in, Godzilla's doing, like, high kicks and, like, is, like, got a cute little smile. And he's, like, the hero. He's fighting other bad guys. It is such a quick turnaround. And I'm not quite sure how it made that jump from being basically a horror movie to being something that was much more lighthearted.
I don't want to get wrapped around the axle with Godzilla too much. Partly because I'm not familiar with it, but also partly because I'm sure you just got other places to go. But I just like with Godzilla, there are so many Godzilla movies that have kind of tried to creep back into badass to some extent.
Yeah, it kind of comes and goes in terms of the seriousness.
And there also is how, like, cool ages very poorly and becomes campy really fast. And so what looked cool to one generation, and especially one generation's version of special effects, becomes campy really fast. And so you lose stakes there.
Yeah.
I think,
and then I also think about the Japanese love for mascots and how close Godzilla and Mothra are to mascots. So there is a real temptation to make that connection.
When I when you mentioned Godzilla last week, my brain immediately went to kind of like Beetlejuice, that there was a spinoff cartoon television show that I watched that ran for a while about Godzilla. And on this show, it was almost like, if you haven't seen it, it's I mean, if you end up with a whole lot of free time, I'd say it's definitely worth it. But who has free time these days? It was like a almost like a Johnny Quest style, old school, like Hanna-Barbera coloring. Team of scientists go from place to place. There's like the kids on the boat, too. And anytime they encounter something supernatural or science fiction-y, like a giant squid, one of the main scientists has a button on his belt and he presses it. And Godzilla, no matter where he is in the world, or she, I don't know, hears it and immediately comes. And then, like, you know, second act or whatever, Godzilla comes out of the ocean and then fights whatever the main bad guy is. And that's the show. And also, this is the show where I was introduced to Godzuki, which is like the Scrappy-Doo to Godzilla's Scooby-Doo. And Godzuki is like 10 feet tall, baby Godzilla, like lives under the ship with the kids. And
this is Pokemon.
Yeah, I think
minus
that's
the
riffing
balls.
On there's a movie called Son of Godzilla, which is probably the seventh or eighth Godzilla movie that was made. And it is just, it's a cute little baby Godzilla who goes around and like trips over stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And get to that
talk?
Hijinks.
It's almost like Scrap, or not even, like Scooby-Doo talking, like, burr, 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 burr. It's like, Godzuki, you just crushed that table. Burr, 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 burr. And they, you could tell the people making the cartoon, like, didn't, like, they had an idea for a cartoon, and someone's like, well, Godzilla's doing really well, can we just make this a Godzilla cartoon? And they're like, yeah, we can force Godzilla into every single episode. And there's an episode where they accidentally end up in Atlantis. Which, yeah, how does Godzilla help there? We'll find a way. And there's an episode where they all get shrunk down to the micro level. Like,
so what, Godzilla's just extra super big then? Like, what? Do they shrink Godzilla down? That defeats the purpose of him being Godzilla?
They do. There's a scene that burned into my memory from my childhood of like, oh no, we're shrunk down really small. Quick, send in this character whose entire thing is that he's giant. And he shrinks down and Godzilla uses his laser vision against a giant amoeba, which, you know, same size as Godzilla.
I was like, it's got to be microbes to, like, educate the children about microorganisms.
I Amazing. Don't think that any of it was meant to be educational, but but getting way off track of, like, our premise here.
Yeah, well, I think it's a nice, firm base to establish the kind of trope that we're talking about, or this tendency that we're talking about. And when I was thinking of, like, well, what series would we want to toy around with this? Because first off, it has to be one that doesn't already have a kids' TV show based on it. And I was thinking, well, I think a lot of horror movies or scary movies kind of could easily fit into this in the way that Godzilla does, in the sense that they have, like, a monster. And if you just cutify the monster, then automatically you have a children's TV show. So virtually anything where you have like a specific like monster, especially like any kind of animal-like creature chasing people around, Jaws or Godzilla or Tremors, you could make it cute pretty easily. And so I was like, well, what could we do that would be like more challenging to turn into like a children's TV show? The one that I mentioned briefly,
Human Centipede.
It was the Human Centipede, which I don't know if there's a way to do that without fundamentally changing the premise of what the Human Centipede is. So,
I mean, I grew up on the very hungry caterpillar, which could be hungry for anything.
Oh, God.
I've got a hot take here, and that is that I don't think Human Centipede was a good series.
No, I'm, yeah, I would, I've only seen the first one, but it did not compel me to see any others. Yeah. Just not good. I mean, yeah. It's just a very sticky premise that they drag out to feature length.
I think you get the entire effect of it just from the synopsis. Like, you can spend 30 seconds and that's all you need.
Like, oh, gross.
Yeah, gross. Yeah. I don't need to sit down for an hour and a half of that.
But then one occurred to me, which is like, oh, this is horrific and it shouldn't be a children's show, but I could see how it, there's like a path to a children's show through it. And that is the Saw series.
Oh no.
Oh man. I have so many opinions already. Okay. I'm going to let you finish your setup and then I'm going to dive in.
So obviously the Saw series is basically just an entire series based around elaborate forms of torture. And you have the sort of central villain Jigsaw, who wears this kind of puppet-like mask. And so this seems ill-suited for any kind of children's entertainment, but it is entirely focused around puzzles and solving puzzles. It's kind of like an escape room dynamic, just one that involves cutting like your eyeball out or what have you.
Blue's Clues adjacent?
Yeah.
Oh.
So the challenge here is, how do we get from torture to children?
So I guess my first thing I have to ask is, have you seen the most recent entry in the Saw universe?
Definitely not. I think I've only seen the first two movies.
Get ready to have your mind blown.
I, true to form, have seen none of them.
Okay.
They're already veering in that direction, Mafo.
Oh my God.
They are beginning the transformation that you're describing. And so, I don't know if I mentioned this when we did our sequel creep episode, but Saw, it's starting to tick some of those boxes. Like, they had really rapid sequels one after another. And I feel like, you know, they hit some midpoints and didn't get like to the big checkpoints, but they already had the one episode that has nothing to do with the main killer, Jigsaw, John Kramer. He's not even in it, you know? And then now the most recent one is the one where they're like kind of combining a few. They're trying to humanize the main character through like a backstory where they tell you why he turned evil even more than, you know, they already have. And in the most recent one, it's a prequel. And in the prequel, he just spoilers here. John Kramer, who will later turn into Jigsaw, finds out he has cancer and he gets scammed by a group who says, like, we can cure your cancer. Come to this retreat. And then he finds out that it's all fake and everyone who set him up was just stealing his money. And then he hunts down all the people who are responsible. And then, like, he gives them, like, you know, a justified murder torture experience for all of them. And there is a young child in the process that he befriends and saves at the end, who's like turning into like the kid, the point of view audience kid member. Like, I can see how they're already starting to be like, look, he's the killer, clearly, but he's also going to be a secondary protagonist. And if this kid ends up in trouble one day, he might be like, oh no, I'm being attacked by gremlins. Let me call my buddy John Kramer. And then John Kramer's going to show up and be like, I'm going to put them in a Jigsaw trap.
I'm also seeing like a suggestion of, I don't know, you could title this like Karma Kids or something like that, where the puzzles that the kid has to solve are who did wrong and what do they deserve as a consequence, sort of passing down divine judgment from the very simple sort of morals, what have we learned today, kids, kind of perspective that children are often given. That's that kind of steps back into legitimate horror all over again, the idea of being judged and sentenced by a four-year-old. But, you know, I don't know if you have another direction in mind for that.
Well, so for one thing, so let's run with this Karma Kids idea for a moment and say that, yeah, so the kid is like meting out justice to people who've done bad things, but it's not necessarily people who are doing elaborate scams or know, people who have murdered people or anything like that. Just like the bully who took his lunch money.
It's the kid judging the kid's peers.
Yeah. And so
children's revenge fantasies can be about really petty things. Yeah.
Jigsaw comes in and the child finds himself like locked inside of the one of the playground, like a piece of playground equipment. He's like handcuffed to the...
Oh my God. We grew up on a playground with a thing called the hamburger. That was
that's
just
exactly
a
what big... I was thinking of. And yes. I was like, how do I refer to that? Because I don't think that's like a universal...
It's not, but I think the evocativeness of a piece of playground equipment referred to as the hamburger is the right kind of ambiguous that I would enjoy as an audience member. So in a purely audio medium. So listener, picture a piece of playground equipment that you would want to call the hamburger or that you would think was justified in being called the hamburger. And you're there anyway.
It's going to burger your hams
and
burg your hams.
And so there's the standard like Jigsaw setup where there's like a screen or some kind of like communication device that lets this child know he has to do such and such to like break free or else this terrible thing is going to happen. But instead of having to like maul himself or something, he's got to do some kind of like good deed or he'll get a serious chiding. I just think it's just like the same like setup as Saw, but just like drained of all stakes. Just you have to do a nice thing for someone.
100 deeds for Eddie McDowd.
Get well noodle card.
So what this kind of reminds me of a little bit is in a way like Jurassic Park has now done like the Jurassic Park kids show. And it's like one step removed from the old Animal Planet shows where there's like all the cartoon gang hanging out in Treehouse and they're looking at the screen and it pops up and they're like, today on Jigsaw's Murder House, and like comes up and like, if you'd like to play a game, today's game is, and like you learn about an animal. Today's murder game is you have to tickle this tiger or you have to drain the venom from this platypus. And then Jigsaw like comes off on his little bicycle, his little Billy the Puppet persona. Which, yeah. By the way, if I think Andrew, you're the one who probably doesn't already know this.
Yep.
One of Jigsaw's shticks is that he likes to come out and like introduce himself as this puppet persona called Billy the Puppet. I don't think it's great. Ever
We're
really even explained
already.
How he controls this puppet. But he comes out on a little tricycle and he's got like a little white face with like lines on it and he's like waves. He's already very much like, you know, a kid's character mascot.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he comes out or there's like a little CG animation of Billy the Puppet like pointing at the platypus and being like, did you know that platypi only exist in Australia and they have venom glands and they lay eggs, but they're mammals. And then the kids have to be like, oh, no, we're going to have to milk a platypi. And it comes into the little murder dungeon room with them. And then you learn by the end of the episode. I'm still seeing this as a TV show.
Yeah, no, definitely a TV show. I think that's because it has to be like very formulaic. It's like the same thing, which is, I mean, basically what Saw is. This is the same thing mm-hmm. over and over again. It's just different forms of elaborate torture. It's just instead of different forms of elaborate torture, it's different forms of like harmless entertainment and education, edutainment.
Learning, yeah.
I do like, maybe this is swinging things back too much in the serious direction, but like I remember often thinking of school as a bit of a torture prison. Like on bad days, sure, not yeah. all the time, but the idea of having to go to a place, having to take in the information that you're told to, like I think a lot of kids who really long for freedom and like impulse and spontaneity do
oh my
feel
gosh.
That way about school. And then two, good deeds that you do because you're told to do them are definitely a form of torture that kids understand. Like not kindness out of the goodness of your own heart, but kindness because a finger has been wagged at you and you'd been told that this is your duty. Definitely a thing that kids would probably place on a similar pedestal to having to cut their own hands off.
Okay, stop me if I'm going too far with this, but what you just said kind of reminded me of a few other major cinematic tropes, and it kind of just threw to the story formed in my head. So do you know how there's like every major tough guy or heel or whatever usually ends up with a movie in their repertoire about like so-and-so has to be the babysitter, Mr. Babysitter, or like, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson or John Cena. There's always one moment where like, I'm a big tough guy and now I have to take care of this little kid.
Oh, yeah.
And I could just see like, well, now it's Jigsaw's turn. And like after the events of Saw X, Kramer has rescued this little orphan boy, Carlos. And then like, he finds out, oh, Carlos doesn't have parents. Well, I guess I'm going to have to take care of him for a few days. And then Carlos comes home and is like, Uncle Jigsaw, I had a really bad time. I got in trouble at school because I wasn't paying attention because it's just so boring and torturous. And he's like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to do what I do. So he sets up the murder dungeon and he puts Carlos in there and chains him to a desk. And then he like turns on the screen as Billy the Puppet comes out and says, you're going to have to learn the value of an education or you're going to die. And just his different approaches to teaching him. And I guess at some point,
parallel
he's gonna
possibility with that. Like, I don't know how. So maybe this is a bit more of a niche kid reference. I'm just thinking about ways like to make horror for kids that feels like genuinely horrific for kids or genuinely like revenge fantasy for kids. But I definitely have memories of when I dealt with bullies a lot when I was a kid. One of the things that I often had to deal with then from adults was adults being like, well, here's what you do. And like laying down solutions that often were kind of profoundly useless or very clearly meant for other people. So I definitely remember like being told, here's things you should do to deal with these people. And I can totally imagine a Jigsaw adoptive father figure, Uncle Jigsaw, being like, well, here's what you do. You handcuff them inside the hamburger, which everybody knows is not up to modern playground regulations, and they'll just get tetanus, and you turn them loose if and only if they, you know, provide the apology to which you are entitled. And the kid has to execute on or refuse to execute on the advice that Uncle Jigsaw has provided.
I really love the idea of, like, I didn't think that you were going to have him tell the kid to do a Jigsaw. But I really like the idea that
if
he's like monitoring the kid.
Is a good idea.
And he's like, so how did it go?
It's all he knows.
He's like, well, I tied him. I handcuffed him inside of the hamburger. And I told him that if he didn't apologize, then a bucket of worms were going to fall on top of him. And Uncle Jigsaw was like, worms? He's like, yeah, worms. They're fun. You know, you're not supposed to. That's something he's wanting to do. He wants worms. No, it's got to be razor blades. And Carlos is like, razor blades? But that's going to hurt.
I like this dynamic of like the innocent child and the psychopathic murderer.
Where he like takes him to like some sort of horrible like drug den later. He's like, look at all these kids, Carlos. These are the other kids that threw their lives away. And now we have to punish them for making bad decisions. And he's like, okay, so let's make them eat vegetables. No, it's too late for vegetables.
It's too late for vegetables. I mean, tagline for children right there. Horror tagline specifically for a child audience.
Jigsaw babies. It's too late for vegetables. Like the image is like,
oh my God,
a poor like drug addicted woman with like a carrot in one of her eyes, like screaming.
What is, okay, if we're doing this, what is Uncle Jigsaw's like preferred outcome? It sounds like with the cancer backstory, again, as usual, I have not seen the movie that we're riffing on, any of mm-hmm. them, but it sounds like with the cancer backstory, we're looking at somebody who envisions like nice people deserve to live, or is like, I want to be someone who like stands up for myself. So I want to make a kid who stands up for himself too.
Opinions on the analysis of this. So everything I'm going to say, just know that I want to say so much more, but this is the very short version of it. They are grossly inconsistent with Jigsaw's motivations, but as presented in the first few movies, ostensibly, his rules are he does not
give us a few more adverbs, Jack.
He does not kill anybody. He gives them an opportunity to find their zeal for life and overcome their hang-ups, and then they will come out of the traps better for it, or they will die.
I see.
Asterisk on every type. Word there, because he absolutely kills people 100%. There are so many traps that cannot be solved no matter what. But and also the way he punishes people, you can be put in a trap just because you know somebody who like didn't do their taxes properly, you know, like
I understand, like I could barely hear you through all the air quotes. Okay. But I get like
but if we're taking the character as the rules would present them, then Jigsaw is trying to help people through these murder dungeon tests.
Well, that's very relatable, because the idea of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger is one of the great stupid falsehoods of our time, because of course, like losing an arm or cutting off your own hand does not make you stronger. It gives you PTSD and makes you pass your pain on to other people. So, you know, definitely. It sounds like we can really have, like, for the grown-ups, there can be a salvation narrative around Jigsaw for this, while the kids can learn valuable moral lessons. Yeah.
Follow up
of their own.
Yes and to that. Throughout the series, Jigsaw...
I don't know if that deserved yes
Jigsaw
and.
Jigsaw does actually collect a bunch of acolytes, I guess you could... Like, people who were victimized in his traps and came out as survivors, and then they're like, we want to help. We want to do the next one. We want to help whatever. And in almost
gotcha, he has
every
like a pyramid
case,
scheme going.
Dare I say every case, they're actually much worse off after they've been turned into a monster by Jigsaw. But he hasn't
but
done it to a child
better.
Yet, you know? Maybe Carlos is going to be the one that melts his heart, even though we're kind of messing with the timeline because he does die at some point in the series.
I will say, just talking about messing with the timeline, I will... point out that a pretty common thing in things that have enough sequels is like timeline divergence. You have some sort of time split where something happens in one universe and it doesn't happen in the other universe. Mm-hmm. And so you have two separate, vaguely parallel paths.
Oh, yeah.
That
the longing
they
for
can
continuity.
Kind of switch between as they want to. Yeah. And so
there's a quote of some kind that I probably won't say exactly right, that like the passion for truth is one of like the weakest human passions, and I'll just modify that to the passion for continuity is one of the weakest human passions. So yeah. Much more fun to imagine what could have been than to continue along the path of what we've already decided.
Agreed.
Go back and revise, why not? We love to edit anyway. Yeah. Half what you were saying.
And I think you have two types of timeline fuckery. One is where, well, we want to do this, but we know it doesn't make sense. So let's
taxonomy
make a new timeline.
Fuckery. Love it.
So one is like intentional, but really just an excuse to do something fairly arbitrary that doesn't mesh with the rest of the story. The other one is, well, we did all of these sequels that don't make sense. How does it make sense? Oh, there's just a very complicated timeline. And this is usually, I will say, like typically fan concocted. There's like some sort of impulse that wants to draw these things together. The Legend of Zelda series, most famously, I would say, does this. And it annoys me so much that I actually literally wrote an essay about it once.
That essay of yours leapt into my mind when you were describing that rule. I remember it so vividly.
And so, yeah, you have that type as well. And in this case... I think you could have, with the Saw series, you have sort of a pivotal moment where he meets little Carlos, and there's the Jigsaw that doesn't kill little Carlos, and there's the Jigsaw that does. And the Jigsaw that does goes on to the normal Jigsaw stuff, and the Jigsaw that doesn't maybe slowly gets redeemed by this child who basically acts as a filter to his more psychopathic tendencies.
Oh, man.
And has the... kind of brings the lightheartedness of childhood to his murderous antics.
So in theory, the setup is that Uncle Jigsaw is the one teaching lessons to little Carlos, but in fact, it's the other way around.
Carlos is the one teaching
Carlos
lessons
like,
to
no,
Uncle
Jigsaw. No, Uncle
Jigsaw,
that's not right.
we learned in school that when you get mad at somebody, you give them your lunch and then they like you.
I don't know exactly what the, you know, purpose was.
I love it. They'll meet in the middle somewhere. It's like, well, you can't give everybody who doesn't like you your lunch. Well, you can't murder everybody who doesn't like you either. And I guess you're right. So we have to decide, who are we going to give our lunch and who are we going to murder?
And what other options do we
have? Oh my gosh, I love, like, what if it's not even like little orphan? What if it's he's just taking care of this kid while his mom is, like, you know, working a second job, and like she comes back and she's like the third leg in this triangle of, like, she comes back and's like, no, so you're both wrong. Uncle Jigsaw, thank you for trying, but actually you can't murder people. Here's why. And also, Carlos, you're trying so hard, you're doing so good. Here's why you can't murder people. And like, she's just very, very understanding and almost like a...
Played by Miss Rachel.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, is Miss Rachel busy? Let's get her for this.
I'm sure she's got lots of free time.
I heard recently that she just got like a deal with Netflix. And
yeah, she's on Netflix now. But they recycle a lot of material, so I feel like she's probably available.
Yeah, to do something, to expand
her
repertoire.
Rachel, do you mind stepping into our children's... torture morality play.
We just want to show the most powerful example of what your lessons can accomplish, like, up against truly impossible odds, the people that it can convert.
Miss Rachel's gonna be like, are there puppets? There are puppets.
There's room for you to negotiate, Miss Rachel. We're already anticipating your terms. I like the implication in this, too, that, like, I don't know what Jigsaw's financial situation is in the movies, but it does sound like what he does is largely a labor of love, that it's not very remunerative unless he somehow manages to get hold of the finances of the people that he's killed, or
so,
if he has to get donations from the people he converts.
So
but
my understanding, they never directly address it, but I just, like, I put it in, this is my fan canon answer, is that Jigsaw uses the same financial operation that Dexter from Dexter's Laboratory uses, which is...
Okay, not Dexter from Dexter's Serial Killer.
No, not the other serial killer. The little boy genius who has like an 800 level underground laboratory. Like, he is allegedly this man who can barely walk, building these 20-ton complex mechanism machines that, like, can detect a drop of blood, and if they don't detect it, then they will shred someone's skeleton out of their body and stuff like that, all by himself, until, like, I guess his acolytes come and join him later. They never explain where he gets his material. Like, is he outsourcing some of these machines overseas? They never explain how he buys it or how he installs it or how he gets the locations. But,
well, I think we know the answer now is via his side hustle as a babysitter.
Wow. Babysitters get paid well.
They do. They do, actually. But, you know, it might stretch credulity only slightly more than the rest of the series does.
I'm trying to think of some of the more complicated, like the death Ferris wheel that he has, or the mechanism that will detect brain matter if it's put on a scale, and all these things that, like, cannot be tweaked with, like, the wrong bodily fluid, or it'll know, and stuff like that. I don't know what is the most complicated or what is the worst example of him having just basically wizard magic to make these things work. But I love the idea that he's just like, he has the same people who built the Batcave. You know, they're never going to tell anyone, like, oh yeah, no, that's my machine that was on the news killing all those people in a public square. But maybe it's just because he's getting like a few extra bucks from his babysitter job.
I mean, and even if I disagree with Jigsaw on fundamentally like the means of his mission, I really admire his dedication to said mission and the fact that it is a mission that he is doing, even though it is not itself super profitable. Like, ultimately, he's not a self-interested, like, ultra capitalist. He's someone who sees the change that he wants in the world and is that change. And he's doing it in the way that, you know, a person who volunteers as like a Girl Scout leader or like puts in all their spare hours at the ASPCA or does a lot of community theater. Like he believes in something.
I love that you're putting this like this quest, this murder quest on the same level of like passion project as like volunteering with the dog shelter.
Churches are tax exempt no matter what they believe in. So belief gets a certain amount of buy-in collectively in the world that we come from.
Okay, so for the sake of the narrative,
that's probably cuttable. But
no, I love that point. For the sake of the narrative flow that we usually try to put together for one of these things, how does the story of Jigsaw and Carlos end? Is it going to be a season arc? Are we going to try to like wrap it up with a nice little bow? Is there going to be, or we're going to end it with a wedding? Or a funeral
between Miss Rachel and Jigsaw.
Oh my gosh, is Miss Rachel going to be the love interest at that? And then Carlos is going to be like, are you going to be my new dad?
I think Jigsaw needs to propose to Miss Rachel and get turned down, like very gently.
Oh my gosh, and there could be this whole episode where he puts her into a trap where the whole thing is like, I'm trying to teach you that you actually love me, and she's just not having it, and she's like, oh, so I have 30 seconds to cut off my own ring finger or this thing is going to cut through my heart. And he's like, that's right. Your heart that you aren't using. And then she just like talks to him like he's a child. And he's finally like, oh, fine. You can just press the button and it'll stop.
And then he loses his job as a babysitter after that, because this is like the ultimate story of male entitlement.
So I guess the message of this story is incels are bad. Oh God, Carlos can deliver that analysis. I learned
Carlos
something today.
Straight to camera, Uncle, at the end.
Uncle Jigsaw, what's that, Carlos? Women don't
the
owe
final
you
scene
anything
of the season.
Just because you trap them in a murder dungeon.
Yeah, this is a presentation that he gives to his class, or maybe like at a state essay competition or something like that at the end, and He gets a B minus.
There can be a take your kid to work day, but since Carlos, his dad isn't in the picture and his mom is probably doing something that she can't take him, Uncle Jigsaw is like, oh, I'll take you with me. And he's like, well, is this really a job if you don't get paid? And he's like, oh, you're going to love this. Well, you can press the button. This makes the saw blades come from the ceiling. And he's like, I don't want to press the button that makes saw blades come from the ceiling. I want gummy bears. We're making Carlos even younger, like each episode.
I just had a really like weird, surreal meta image, because not only are we implying that that Jigsaw is just kind of an asshole in the end, just kind of a very like amplified asshole, but a very normal one, like a very regular, unremarkable kind of dude in terms of his vision of the universe and his place in it. And if he proposes to Miss Rachel and gets turned down and then gets fired as a babysitter and can't finance his side projects anymore off of his babysitting, because Miss Rachel can afford an expensive babysitter, like all of that is pretty believable. And then if little Carlos has to like wrestle with what it all means to him and then goes in for an essay competition and he writes this essay, and the thing that he realizes at the end is not just that that Uncle Jigsaw was kind of awful, it also is like, oh, like nobody is the main character of the entire world. And then we look out at the audience and we see like an audience of all of these like main characters from a bunch of children's TV shows all like applauding and being like, yeah, we're not the main characters. And then he gets, you know, seventh place in the competition in the end, and everyone just kind of goes on with their very regular individual lives. That's the surreal image that I had for how this finishes. It's not much worse than the ending of Roseanne.
I also like the idea that each episode you can riff on whatever's popular in the news at the time. Like if there's ever another popular like Furby or Beanie Babies craze, you can put whatever into the murder dungeon. Be like, Carlos, you're spending way too much time playing Pokemon. That is why I've collected 10 of the top most popular Pokemon. And now they have to show how much they really care about life in order to escape my traps. And Carlos is like, it's okay, I'm gonna tell them all how to escape your traps. Like, War Turtle, use your water to get past the electricity trap. Curses, Carlos, you've done it again.
It really is like, it's not like going back to somewhat the Dexter's Lab type reference. This is a little bit Pinky in the Brain. Is like you have this horrible but deluded protagonist who's very good at one thing, and then you have someone who for some reason he cares about who just like follows him around and really like foils his every plan. And it's the same plan every time. It's the same like
like that's a solution goal. To everything is put people in a murder dungeon because it's all he knows. He's like, I've already rented the murder dungeon. I gotta use it.
There's really not a better metaphor for him than like lab mouse treated horribly and then somehow turned sentient, shaking his tiny fist at the world and perpetually failing to accomplish his goal. Like that's Saw in a nutshell right there. That's the compassion, the universal compassion.
I'm picturing him using his only talent for like different things and like how he'd do it. Be like, hey, Uncle Jigsaw, we have to bring something to the potluck. And they asked us to make banana pudding, and he's like, oh, I'll take care of it. So he just kidnaps a master chef and puts him in the dungeons. Like, you have 30 seconds to teach me how to make a banana pudding.
30 seconds.
Which is like the easiest thing to make.
You buy a damn mix, dude. What kind of babysitter are you that you've never had to make a banana pudding?
That's why he turned evil.
So he just could not make this child happy. Go ahead, Mavu.
An alternative ending.
Okay.
Please.
Where one day,
multiple times,
Jigsaw wakes up and he's the one in the murder dungeon.
Ooh.
And a voice comes over and he's like, before you got to do all this or something terrible will happen. And so Jigsaw is having to figure out a puzzle. And in the midst of this, like, and so there's twists and turns and he's like getting through the puzzles, but then there's another puzzle and it's even harder. And it's like a surprise, like, oh no, there's actually bomb embedded in my spleen. And
bomb in your spleen.
He's got to do surgery on himself, and he didn't kidnap any surgeons, so he doesn't know how to do surgery.
Which, and according to the lore, is inaccurate because he's kidnapped so many surgeons that have to do surgery.
Right. My we're apologies. In an alternate timeline. Yeah, alternate. Where, yeah, he's focused right. his efforts on this one child, right?
But each like part of the puzzle like drops a different hint, and it kind of balloons into, it turns out Carlos and Rachel have rigged up a torture chamber to teach him how much they care about him.
Oh my gosh. So like each puzzle he does gives him a letter, and when he puts them all together, they spell like happy birthday, favorite yeah, uncle.
Exactly.
God.
The and the bomb lesson in is his love spleen. Languages.
This is it's like a Y shape.
This is like, there's the idea of the golden rule, which is treat others the way you want to be treated. And then there's the platinum rule, which is treat others the way they want to be treated. And Jigsaw's just been begging someone to be subjected to it. A torture dungeon this whole time.
Which also lore accurate, because he dies in a torture dungeon. Spoilers. Not in a trap. Yeah. Someone just like has an
alternate
option
timeline,
to
though.
Like, don't use that saw to cut my throat out and you can get away. And the guy's like, no, I'm totally going to use it to cut your throat out. Spoilers.
And but in this case, he's like, oh, torture sucks.
Final line of the final episode roll credits. Like, wow, this is what torture feels like? I've been doing this whole time? No one told me.
Anyway, I think that's a fitting end to, or one of many possible fitting ends to Uncle Jigsaw.
Well, look, mostly what we do on Basic Pitches is we take an idea and then we just spin like 17 sequels and a bunch of spinoffs out of it. I feel like we just pitched a one season television show.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is for children and adults.
For children,
in different
by
ways.
Children.
And comes to a really solid end that it would be sort of hard to come back and like jam a second season on the back of. I'm proud of us for that. Not a lot of TV shows pull that off, especially not at the pitch stage.
Yeah. but then there's going to be like some sort of like fan favorite side character that's going to get their own.
Well, fans are going to insist.
There's
going to
be a whole Miss Rachel spinoff. You know, she's
well, absolutely. Fans are going to be like, everything Miss Rachel does after that is
oh my god,
a continuation.
And then you find out that
this
entire
series.
Thing was just a prequel to Miss Rachel's show on Netflix, where she's talking with puppets, and she's like, "This is what I do when I leave Carlos with Uncle Jigsaw."
Yeah, guys, before we stop recording, we have to remember to put in the that this is paid content for Netflix to promote Miss Rachel's new series, which I gather is going to be really, really a big step away from what she's done in the past.
I thought you were being serious at first. I was like, what? Wait, we got a sponsor?
Surprise!
And it's Miss Rachel? Oh, man, this is going to be so confusing.
It was actually I'm responsible for the sponsorships, and there was a bidding war between the Saw franchise and Miss Rachel,
and
that, that's
said
what's
both,
led
please.
To today.
Amazing.
God, an ending, a clean ending. I don't even know what to do with it.